This podcast was recorded Thursday, September 14th at 10:37 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Like Governor Mike DeWine will find his name on a petition saying that Pete Rose should never be reinstated or put in baseball's Hall of Fame. The governor, of course, is a huge Pete Rose fan. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who occasionally gather at a meeting and can't figure out who's in charge. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, more trouble with gathering signatures for a petition, not on Pete Rose, but about fracking under state parks. But first, Ohio's redistricting process restarted this week, or it was a false start.
Is this an inauspicious start?
Well, we haven't started yet. So.
That was Governor DeWine, a commission member, trying to describe yet another odd turn in this roughly two-year saga. The Ohio Redistricting Commission met this week to consider redrawing state legislative maps that have been ruled unconstitutional repeatedly. They met and then adjourned. It seemed the five Republicans on the seven-member panel could not decide who should serve as co-chair for them. Democrats say they were ready to name a co-chair, but they wanted Republicans to go first. Commission member, Republican Senator Rob McCauley, basically said it's the Senate's turn to co-chair.
We'd like to see the Senate have its opportunity to co-chair, given that the House was co-chairing the last time. But again, that's just our preference. The Speaker and the President are the ones who have to come up with the conclusion.
The director of Ohio's chapter of the League of Women Voters, Jen Miller, a frequent critic of the commission and their maps, reacted this way.
If they can't even pick co-chairs, how are they going to work together to create maps that uphold the Ohio Constitution?
When, perhaps if, they figure out who will sit in which of the seven chairs, they will draw new maps for the state Senate and state House of Representatives that voters will use in next year's election. To help us figure out what happened and what is going on, we are joined by a woman who always has a chair, but is so busy she hardly has time to sit in it, Ohio Public Radio and TV's Karen Kassler. Karen, welcome to Snollygoster.
Hey, great to join you, Mike.
It was quite a day. You asked Mike DeWine that question, and his reaction seemed to say it all. He was at a loss for words.
Yeah, and how it happened was we all gathered in the room, and the room was packed. The room was packed with advocates who want to see different maps this time around. There were staff members, there were reporters, and this was a different room than the redistricting saga from last year, which was over in the State House, a tiny little room. This was a much bigger room, but still packed with people. And all the members came in, the seven members of the commission came in, and they all gradually left, except for Republican Secretary of State Frank LaRose. He kind of hung around.
So there are seven members. There are five Republicans and two Democrats, the governor, the auditor, the Secretary of State, two members from the House, Democrat Allison Russo, Republican Jeff LaRae, two from the Senate, Republican Rob McCauley, who we heard from, and Democrat Nikki Antonio. Who was the Republican co-chair of this commission the last time?
Well, the whole Ohio Redistricting Commission has to be reconstituted, and that's why we're seeing all this happen here. Last time, the Redistricting Commission was chaired by Ohio House Speaker Bob Kopp and Senator Vernon Sykes. And some of these things changed over time, but that whole commission was basically done, and so this is a new commission with new appointees, and so there need to be new co-chairs. But the main co-chair last time was Speaker Bob Kopp.
Was there any controversy last time in picking co-chairs that you know of?
No, not at all. I think it was pretty clear that Bob Kopp as the speaker was a choice, and then Vern Sykes, the Democrat, who had been involved with redistricting for years, was another choice.
So why are we having a hard time this time?
Well, I think there are certainly a lot of questions about why it's taken this long to get to this point. The last time the Redistricting Commission met was in May of 2022. So there's been a long period of time where this could have been worked out and discussed. And that's what Democrats have been saying. Hey, this is this is crazy that we're waiting this long to do these sorts of things, much less get to the business of drawing maps. But there's also a behind the scenes thing happening. We've got Senate President Matt Huffman, who is term limited in the Senate, wants to run for the House, and he's expecting to be elected. And if he is, he wants to challenge Speaker Jason Stevens, who is obviously going to be able to appoint the House co-chair on the Republican side. So it's really kind of a little bit of political intrigue, I guess, there.
Just a thought here. Did they consider alternate solutions for picking the co-chair? Let me just run down a list here. Rock, paper, scissors, flipping a coin, drawing straws, pick a number, put names in a box, feats of strength. Any of those things could have worked out?
Well, and that's we didn't get to see that process as they all left the room to try to figure that out. The one person who came back and talked to us was Governor Mike DeWine, who said he did not want to be the chair of the Republicans on the panel, and he really didn't have anything else to tell us.
Keith Faber apparently did volunteer. He's the state auditor, a member of the commission. He said, look, I'll be the co-chair, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's going to be potentially a thankless job in some ways, because these maps are going to make people frustrated and irritated. But certainly it's an opportunity for Republicans to preside over the map drawing that they want to see.
So let me ask you this. Is there maybe nobody wants to be the co-chair? Maybe that's what's going on.
That could be possible as well. We don't know, because it's all happening behind the scenes, which is another bit of frustration for people who voted for the amendments that created the Ohio Redistricting Commission. There's not supposed to be this much happening behind closed doors. It's supposed to be out in the open.
Yeah. I mean, you had to remind me who the co-chairs were the last time. I mean, the people who are in charge of this are, you know, the statewide elected leaders and the Senate president and the House speaker. Yeah, they have made their appointments, but they're guiding this from behind the scenes. Does the co-chair really have a lot of power? Does he or she, you know, get to, say, proclaim victory here or take the hits if people don't like it? What's the big deal?
I think it's a leadership role, and it's a visible leadership role. And Jen Miller from the League of Women Voters said she thought it was interesting that they were consulting the person or people who were in charge. And so that speaks to exactly what you just said, that the people who were in charge, or the person who is in charge, wasn't necessarily in the room in terms of deciding who the co-chairs were going to be. And I think it's pretty clear that Matt Huffman has a pretty outsized role in this, and certainly has a lot of power in the Senate, and may have a lot of power on this commission.
All right. So they're supposed to meet on Friday to get to hopefully pick co-chairs and get this process started. This is why they're there, is to draw new maps, the state legislative maps. The congressional ones have been put aside for a couple of years. These are the state Senate and state House districts that the Ohio Supreme Court has repeatedly ruled unconstitutional. And so what happens next once they figure out who the co-chairs are and get down to business?
Well, the maps need to be approved, according to Republican Secretary of State Frank LaRose, a member of the commission, by September 22nd. That's next Friday. So just a couple of days away. They need to approve those maps, he says, to give time for boards of elections to do their thing, for lawsuits to be filed, that sort of stuff. Now, the actual deadline in law, I believe, is October 23rd, but still, that's not far away.
No.
And it took a long time to come up with maps before. And certainly there's going to be litigation, you would expect. I mean, we can't have an election in Ohio without litigation, it seems like. So that's the real issue, is getting those maps done. Now, we keep being told that there are things happening, conversations that are happening among commission members. There aren't any specific maps, but concepts of maps that have been thrown out there. But the Democrats on the commission, Allison Russo and Nikki Antonio, the House and Senate minority leaders, respectively, have said they're not going to vote for anything that gives Republicans more power or in any way violates what they feel is the constitutional mandate that came from last year's repeated rulings that those maps were gerrymandered.
Yeah, I mean, you know, looming in the background, and it has a long way to go, but there is a potential of a redistricting reform amendment on next year's ballot, next November's ballot. Do you How might that affect this map-making process? Might Republicans be more willing to compromise for a more balanced map to take some wind out of the sails of the folks pushing for a completely independent redistricting commission?
Or it could go the other way.
Yes, Democrats
this could be potentially
dig in their heels. Yeah.
Well, it could potentially even be that if Republicans feel like this is their last shot at that amendment, which still has to be approved by the Attorney General and the ballot board and all the signatures and everything, if that amendment is approved by voters, this would potentially be their last shot to really draw the maps the way they want to. So there's the theory that it could go the other way, that it could be very, very friendly to Republicans. But another thing to consider is the map that they drew that got put into place by a federal court after the Ohio Supreme Court ruled it unconstitutionally gerrymandered. Republicans gained seats in the House and Senate under that map. So there's a lot of incumbents to protect here.
Yeah.
And Senate President Matt Huffman yesterday told me that the maps are not going to look like the current map. So that's going to be interesting to see what kind of changes they plan to make.
Yeah, and Democrats, of course, they're in the vast minority here. They only have two members of this commission, so they really don't have a voice if the Republicans can all get their act together, get on the same team. But they're probably looking ahead to 2024 and getting this, if it does get on the ballot, and trying to get that passed.
Right. And I keep hearing from everybody that they want to do a bipartisan map, a map that can last more than just 2 years. But a bipartisan map is going to mean more potential opportunities for Democratic candidates to win House and Senate seats. And so I just don't know if we see Republicans going that direction. But that I keep hearing that that's the goal. Matt Huffman told me that. Others have said that that's the goal, a bipartisan map that they can get minority party buy-in on.
We shall see. We haven't seen it in the years we've been covering this. Since 2010, we have not seen a bipartisan map. Getting back, Karen, to how we began this, I don't know if you want to call it infighting or indecision or the relationship among Republicans on Capitol Square. It seems like the state Senate leadership does not get along with the House leadership, and the governor has relationship issues with both chambers. What's the mood down there?
Well, right now they're not in session, so it's hard to gauge that entirely.
Yeah.
But like I said, Matt Huffman is looking for his future opportunities since he's term limited out of the Senate. And Jason Stevens obviously has some split among the Republican caucus in the House because he won the speakership over Derek Marin, who had been elected earlier as the House Speaker in a vote that didn't count, but was supposed to be the vote that was going to be repeated on the House floor. So there is a split among Republicans on who's the leadership and which direction to go. And I think it does make a bit of a difference. And I think we're going to see next year some very spirited campaigning. And indeed, if Matt Huffman wins, the 2025 is going to be really interesting.
Yeah, and then the governor, he has things he would like to see the legislature do, but has been unable. Some things he's gotten some things passed. The budget was probably a success for him and for everyone involved to a large degree. But, gun safety legislation, other things like that, the governor has tried but had gotten no traction in the state legislature.
Yeah, he said he's going to try something related to guns again soon. We wait to see that. Like you said, that went nowhere after the Dayton mass shooting. It's, I think DeWine is also, and Republican lawmakers as well, are looking at some of these other things that are coming up, the two big votes that are coming up in November on reproductive rights and marijuana legalization. Mm-hmm. And those are huge issues that could potentially get in the way of other legislation that might be coming forward. I mean, just this week, there was a proposal on reducing property taxes for people over 70. That's the kind of thing that a lot of voters might think would be a really cool idea, but is that going to get the priority of some of these other things?
Besides eating popcorn and watching this all happen, what are Democrats doing?
Well, I think certainly they're looking forward to November and what they think will be a victory on the reproductive rights amendment. I think they're expecting the same kind of results that came from the August 8th special election, where issue one, the 60% voter approval for amendments measure, was defeated. I think they're expecting the reproductive rights amendment to win by about that percentage, about 57%.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they're looking at that as being a re-energizing effort as they try to figure out who they're going to run for these offices. I mean, all of the statewide executive offices, including governor, will be open next time around. And so Democrats need to think about if they even win on the maps issue, who are their candidates? Who can they run? Who can win?
Yeah, they got to get a bench or deepen that bench or lengthen the bench or do something. Get a bench. Get a seat.
Yes.
Co-benches.
Exactly.
Karen Kassler, State House Bureau Chief for Ohio Public Radio and Television. Thanks very much for joining us on Snollygoster.
Anytime.
We'll be right back.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now we're taking center stage. Introducing NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of Black-led stories from NPR's podcasts. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. This week it goes to whomever or whatever collected digital petition signatures and letters supporting fracking under state parks. The Cleveland Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com broke this story. They found some 35 people whose names or letters were sent to the Ohio Oil and Gas Land Management Commission in support of responsible drilling under state parks. But they did not send the letters. They did not sign the petition. Many oppose fracking. One was a 9-year-old girl. Another was a blind woman who does not use a computer. The letters were collected and submitted by the Consumer Energy Alliance. They say they did not use any names without permission. Now, Attorney General Dave Yost is investigating. We don't know what happened, whether it was a hacker or artificial intelligence or a shrewd fan of fracking under state parks, but this effort gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. And just spread the word, tell your friends about us. For our audio producer, Dalton Jones, our student producer, Katie Genius, and our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.